Blog Talk Radio.
Spirit of Truth Ministry is delighted to bring you the Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling, where we test the beliefs of Christianity against the very words of Jesus that he gave his own eyewitness disciples. Join us for a unique and challenging study into truth, justice, and the kingdom of heaven.
May? No, it's April. Good morning. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Dennis Neufeld, and I am here on this wonderful Sabbath, April 28, 2018, getting ready for another wonderful study, which we have entitled The Revelation of Jesus with Rick Sterling. We're delighted that you're here with us today, and we hope that you enjoy your time with us and are blessed. I want to call your attention to our chat room. All of the pertinent information that you need about our ministry is listed there. Our original website is located at spiritoftruthministry.net. There you will find our book, The Spirit of the Church, by Rick Sterling and me, Dennis Neufeld, and other writing by Rick Sterling, including The Grand Plan. We also have that's our official website. We have our original website at spiritoftruthministry.net/SM. And we have an email address, spiritoftruthministry@gmail.com, and a mailing address, P.O. Box 1013, Cala Mesa, California, 92320. Let's have prayer and we will start our study. Father in heaven, Jesus Christ, Holy Spirit, we honor your names. We thank you for blessing us with your spirit today and with the words of Jesus Christ that we can read for ourselves and study for ourselves that which is truth. Thank you for leading us into this truth and into righteousness. I pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. Good morning, Larry, and good morning, Larry. And good morning, Dr. Don.
Good morning.
And good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Welcome. As always, we are honored to have you join us in study. And my hope and prayer is that it makes sense and is understandable. Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 and 22. Then Peter went up to him and said, Lord, how often forgive my brother if he wrongs me? As often as seven times? Jesus answered, not seven. I tell you, but 77 times. Yesterday, I was explaining the plan that God has described to us, the plan that He has put together to defeat the rebellion and restore this earth to the good earth that He created. And the point and purpose of forgiveness, God will forgive the sinner. And I don't want you to think that I don't believe that. Even though when I talk about the judgment, I talk about the commandments, I talk about what happened in the garden, and I talk about the gospel of grace as being contradictory to the gospel of the kingdom and the testimony of Jesus. God will forgive the person who recognizes that they have done wrong, are truly sorry for that, and ask for forgiveness. I can give you a myriad of examples. A couple of the clear examples are David and Moses. David, the young man who relationship with God was rock solid, to the point where the giant Goliath had intimidated the whole army of Israel, to the point where no one wanted to go out and face him. And this young lad who refuses to wear armor, and he says, why doesn't anybody go face him? Well, have you seen his size and look at his armor? And well, who's going to be able to defeat him? Well, you don't have to. We have God on our side. When God is on your side, you can face an army of giants. Oh, I don't know. God doesn't seem to be too pleased with us. Well, I wonder why. So David goes down there with his sling and a prayer. Picks up 5 smooth stones and confronts Goliath. You know the story. A lot of people think that it's just one of those children's stories that doesn't really mean that it happened. God slew Goliath using David's sling and smooth stone. Moses was the man that God chose to confront Pharaoh. But Moses decided that he would be unable to speak Pharaoh, especially the message that God had told him to deliver. And after absolutely refusing to do it, God very angrily said, okay, your brother Aaron is coming to see you. You tell Aaron what I've told you, and Aaron will tell Pharaoh. And then Moses leads the Israelites and a huge multitude of people, the mixed multitude, out of Egypt with the staff and God. The Red Sea divides and he and the people walk through on dry ground. They go out into the wilderness to Mount Horeb. God is on the top of Mount Horeb. Moses goes up there. He actually sees God's backside. Years later, the first generation that had refused to enter were dead. The only ones left of that generation were Moses, Caleb, and Joshua. And only two of those were going to enter the promised land. Moses was not allowed to enter the promised land because he disobeyed God. He struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock. David?
Just a quick comment. I know that there are people who would say, well, that seems a little bit petty for God to not let Moses go in just because he did this one little teeny thing. And here is another place where God could have confirmed grace by allowing Moses that one little, you know, saying to Moses.
But Dennis, you forget. Grace didn't come until after the resurrection.
But what I'm saying is, even then.
I know.
If grace was actually operational.
If you're going to be true to the lie.
The lie. Then this
grace doesn't come until after the resurrection.
Grace is like the necessity is the mother of invention, or invention is the mother of necessity.
But then the obvious question is, why did God wait? Why didn't he just do this
then,
you know, in the wilderness?
Right.
And then grace would cover Israel and everybody else.
And you see, this is the thing that I'm saying. This is a perfect opportunity for God to confirm what was going to come. Look, Moses, you screwed up. You struck the rock. But in my love and in my grace for you, I'm going to allow you to enter the promised land with Israel. But he didn't do that.
Because Moses did not demonstrate God honorable and as holy.
Exactly.
In front of the people. And David, you know, we know the exploits of David. In fact, it was so bad, he had sexual relations with another man's wife, and then to save face, he had the other man murdered because the other man was acting honorably and said that he could not rightly have sexual relations with his wife while Israel was doing battle with the army, with the enemy. And there were a few other cases I'm not going to get into, but David, you know, was sorry. And God forgave him. But God has informed everyone. All those who believe, worship, obey God, have been informed. God does not want you to sin. It is not his plan for you to sin. It is his plan for you to become righteous and live honorably in accordance with his will. But if you do sin, you can ask for forgiveness. And God is faithful. He knows your heart. He knows your purposes. He knows your sincerity. And God will forgive. But there is a limit. And we talked about this yesterday. There is a limit to forgiveness. And when Peter asks his master, how many times should I forgive my brother when he sins against me? Seven times? Peter knew something about seven. Seven, the number of completeness, the limit, to Peter, the limit of forgiveness. And his master said, no, not 1 7. Not just once seven times, but 77s. He was not saying 77 times. He was saying 77s. So you could say 490. 490 times you should forgive your brother when he sins against you. This has to do with the kingdom. Yesterday, I talked about the restoration calendar. That the restoration calendar was the day runner, if you will. When the last page of the day runner opened, when the last page of the day runner opened, that would be the day that God would restore the earth. Judgment would have already been completed, and the earth would be made new. But that day is in the past. I talked about this yesterday. March 19, 1994, the day before the spring equinox, was the last day, the last year of the restoration calendar. Turn to Revelation chapter 7. I will be reading verses 1 through 4. Next, I saw four angels standing at the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the world back to keep them from blowing over the land or over the sea or in the trees. And incidentally, the four winds, it came to me while I was writing a paper. These winds are magnetic fields, lines of magnetism.
On Earth, they would be called ley lines.
Yes. And as God used and uses magnetic fields and lines of magnetism to create the universe, to hold it together, to create the planets and everything on them, everything has a magnetic field and operates within it. The four winds would be magnetic winds. Then I saw another angel rising where the sun rises, carrying the seal of the living God. He called in a powerful voice to the four angels whose duty was to devastate land and sea. Wait! Wait before you do any damage on land or at sea or to the trees until we have put a seal on the foreheads of the servants of our God. Then I heard how many were sealed, 144,000 out of all the tribes of Israel. These four angels that had been holding back the four winds had been told to release those winds when the restoration calendar ended. No matter what, when the restoration calendar ended, they were to release the winds and destroy the earth. But when that last day ended, that last year on the calendar ended, and the four angels were ready to release the four winds and destroy land, sea, and trees. And if the land, the sea, and the trees are destroyed, everything on earth is destroyed along with it. A mighty angel, having the seal of God, said, wait, don't release the winds, please, because we will seal the servants of our God, 144,000. Now, the tribes of Israel here, we must understand the reasoning in this, because most people think that the 144,000 are Jews. Some of them will be, but not all of them are. We talk a lot about the kingdom of Elohim. We talk a lot about the kingdom of Elohim, and the kingdom of Elohim was set up thusly. Abraham was the father of the righteous. Abraham is the father of many nations. Many nations. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were the father of what are have been called the four or the 12 patriarchs, the 12 sons from whom the 12 tribes come. And there have been some changes. David's two sons, Ephraim, not Joseph's two sons, sorry. Ephraim and Manasseh. Each were a half tribe. And Levi, we know, was not counted among the 12 because their land was in the heavens. Their inheritance was God. So the names of the tribes have varied, but there's always been 12 because the two half tribes of Joseph's sons made up for the loss of the tribe of Levi in the count of the 12. So anyway, this is what I'm getting at. When the king, the Messiah, took the kingdom away from the Jews, he didn't take away Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Joseph. He didn't take away the people. He took away the responsibility for the kingdom. So as I understand what God is saying here, is that the kingdom has always been made up of 12 tribes. But the 12 tribes can be made up of all the righteous. So the righteous, when they enter the kingdom, enter in as one of the 12 tribes.
Through the 12 gates of the city.
Right.
Wouldn't the way to illustrate that would be, rather than those names represent specific people or specific races or genetics or whatever, couldn't they just simply be organizational names that represent divisions of the organization or the organization as a whole? And so at different points in time, under different conditions, the members and contents and the holders of those titles change.
Yes, and there are different personality types. And this is what I really appreciate about God. There are different personality types. When we read of the blessings that Jacob pronounced on his sons in Genesis, the end of Genesis, we have Jacob giving blessings to each one of his son, he describes characteristics that the offspring of that each particular son will be. When Jesus chose his 12 disciples, they were not all mirror images of each other. John had one type of personality, and how that personality interacted with the personality of the Son of God. And Peter had another. James, another. Matthew, another. Thomas. Nathaniel. They all had different personality types, but the Son of God brought them all together for what they could contribute. And it is my understanding that the kingdom of Elohim is no different, that the 12 tribes are actually different personality types, and that God is not looking for one particular personality type, that personality actually adds substance to what God needs to accomplish. He needs different types of personalities. And that's what the 12 tribes represent. So when you have completed the sanctification process and you enter the kingdom of Elohim, you don't have to change your personality. That would be impossible. Into a tribe that fits your personality. Turn to Matthew chapter 24. Verse 14. This is a key verse, and it's one I think that all Christians know from memory. If not, it's very simple. It's easy to memorize. The Son of God is speaking to his disciples, giving them a description of the end. This verse is key to knowing when the end will be. If you are living in the end, this verse will let you know whether or not you are living in the end, if you think you might be. This good news of the kingdom will be proclaimed to the whole world as a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come.
Why is it that the Christian church is still trying to spread a gospel into the world? Could it be that they're spreading the wrong gospel?
Here is something to consider. I started today's study with a refresher on what we did yesterday. What we did yesterday is I talked mainly about the restoration calendar and the limit of forgiveness. How many parts of the world throughout the generations, over the last, say, 1,000 years, how many significant parts of the world had never heard of the God of Christianity?
Very small part.
How many parts of the world could tell you what the testimony of Jesus was in fact?
Virtually none.
How many could tell you what, and how many recognized that Paul's gospel was authorized by God through an epiphany as Paul traveled to Damascus to arrest followers of the way? Keep your finger there in Matthew 24 and turn over to Matthew chapter 4. I'm going to read verse 23. Matthew chapter 4, verse 23. He, Jesus, went around the whole of Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. And again in chapter 9, the same thing. Verse 25. Jesus made a tour through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom. So when we go to Matthew chapter 24, verse 14, and the Son of God is telling his disciples for the last time this good news of the kingdom, what he has been preaching in synagogues and from mountaintops and in the valleys and along the roads, in houses and in the portico of the temple. What he has been saying and teaching and proclaiming is the gospel, the good news of the kingdom. Now, why should we think that when he is so clear to let us know that everything that he has been saying, that his disciples have heard, that Matthew and John have written down so that we today would have a record of what he said back then? Why should we then go, well, what he said only applied to the Jews, and we are now under grace because that's what Paul tells us? When the only way that we could logically make that statement and believe that is to say the Son of God lied, or at the very least was misleading us. What he was proclaiming in the synagogues from town to town and in the portico of the temple was the gospel of the kingdom. That's why John in 2 John said, anyone whose teaching does not match 100% with my master's testimony is lying. Don't have anything to do with them. When the Son of God says, this gospel, this good news of the kingdom, he's not saying there is a gospel coming that will be preached in all the world. Something is there. We're going to have someone else deliver the final gospel. What I've been telling you isn't the gospel of the kingdom that is going to save the world. That's coming after the resurrection. He said this gospel of the kingdom. He's talking about his testimony, and he says it will be proclaimed to the whole world as a witness. What is a witness? When the judgment comes, a witness is necessary. When the judgment comes, a witness is necessary. And what is the witness? The witness is the good news of the kingdom. And what is the good news of the kingdom? It is the testimony of the Son of God. It is not the testimony of Paul. It is not the testimony of Hebrews or James or Timothy or Jude. It is the testimony of the eyewitnesses who heard the Son of God and what he said, and they wrote it down. And John's deep concern is that nobody was talking about the testimony of Jesus, that it would disappear. That was his deep concern. It would disappear. Well, here's the thing. If the testimony of Jesus was not going to save the people at the end of time, it was Paul's testimony and his gospel that was going to deliver everyone through grace to God, then why was John so concerned that what his master had said would be lost?
What is it that makes that testimony good news? Is it like John 8:31 and on, where it tells us how to become free from sin?
It tells us how to enter the kingdom. That is the gospel of the kingdom. The saved will be in the kingdom.
But before we can enter, we become free from sin and become sons rather than slaves.
We must be sanctified. So, is it any wonder that when the restoration calendar came to an end, God had not come yet? Is it any wonder that the 10 bridesmaids that went out to meet the bridegroom?
Would you be willing to take a question?
Sure.
Hello, this is Dennis. Who is this? Hello. You're on the air. Hello? I guess maybe they just hit the button accidentally.
So John's concern, and rightly so, was that all the work of his master would be lost.
And you know, it's interesting because he must have seen some evidence of this, Rick, as he was living out the last part of his life, especially when he was on Patmos. He must have had news reports. He must have had people telling him what was going on, enough to drive a concern to write this to one of his parishioners and to mention it.
Right. So when the restoration calendar came to an end, the testimony of the Son of God was only found in Matthew and John. It wasn't found in the world anywhere because it had been overtaken by the writings of Paul. The bridesmaids had gone out to meet the bridegroom, which incidentally is a fulfillment of prophecy.
Yep.
Now, it's a prophecy that describes a fulfillment of prophecy. The fulfillment of prophecy was, we started yesterday, or talked about yesterday, the 2300 evenings and mornings, and then, and let me read that from this Bible, just so, you know, because I like the way this is translated in the Jerusalem Bible. So Daniel chapter 8, verses 13 and 14. I heard a holy one speaking, and another who said to the speaker, "How long is this vision to be of perpetual sacrifice, disastrous iniquity, of sanctuary and army trampled underfoot?" The first replied, "Unto 2,300 evenings and mornings have gone by, then the sanctuary shall have its rights restored." Now, yesterday I said that the Son of God took the kingdom away from the Jews and said that it would be given to a people who would produce the fruit thereof. It goes along with his description of the marriage feast and the naked guest who was bound hand and foot and thrown out. The invitation had gone out to the highways and the byways, and everyone had been invited, good and bad, had been invited. And the marriage hall was full for the first time. If all the king wanted was guests in the marriage hall, good and bad, he had it. But the parable is to tell us something very important. You will not be in the marriage hall improperly dressed or without any clothes, in other words, naked, like is described in Laodicea. The restoration calendar expired. We went into literal, if you will, time. In other words, the yearly progression of weeks, where 1 year equals 1 day of the week and the seventh year is a Sabbath year. That expired. So we are no longer functioning under a calendar that has the judgment attached to it.
A defined endpoint.
We are in a delay. We are in a delay of what?
Judgment.
The release of the four winds. The judgment. Well, and how are the 144,000, how do they come together? Does God just pick and choose? Does he put all the names in a basket and mix them all up in the basket and then start drawing names out, or have them all in a computer and the computer just randomly generates names, and the first 144,000 names to be generated are ones who are sealed? No, that's not the way God works. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream, and in the end of days, the days of the feet, when the nations would be mixed together in the seed of men, and you can't tell me that that is not the case today, where you have Caucasian, Arab, Asian, African, Indian.
Well, and you notice these enclaves being established in all different countries. It isn't a matter of people assimilating anymore. It is people go into a country and segregate.
And how well do they all get along with each other?
At this point, not very well.
Not real well. That is the confirmation that we are in the kingdoms of the feet. That's the last. I mean, there's the 10 toes, but that's the 10 kings at the end of time, at the end of the trumpet judgment and nearing the end of the bowls of wrath. Those 10 kings appear in the sixth bowl of wrath. So we are there, my friends. We are there at the end, according to the information that God has given us. When the 10 bridesmaids went out to meet the bridegroom, it says he was delaying his coming. That delay started during the function of the restoration calendar, while it was still going. The 2300 evenings and mornings came to an end in 1844, and there was a group of people that went out to meet the bridegroom in 1844. 1843 and 1844. And the bridegroom did not come. They had a great disappointment because the bridegroom did not come. Were they delivering the gospel of the kingdom?
No, they were not.
They weren't even Seventh-day keepers at the time. And they didn't give up the misconceptions that they had. Oh, they gave up some of them along the line, but kept most of them. And they too were overcome by the gospel of grace. We're told in Revelation and Sardis that this sleeping group needs to wake up. Sardis is a description of the 10 bridesmaids. Matthew 24:42. What sort of servant, then, is faithful and wise enough? Faithful enough and wise enough for the master to place him over his household, to give them their food at the proper time. Happy that servant if his master's arrival finds him at this employment. I tell you solemnly, he will place him over everything he owns. Now here we have, in this prophecy that the Son of God is giving to his disciples about the end of time, we have this account of a servant.
It is actually a detailed account. It is very specific. There are very specific issues involving this that are identifiers.
He is a servant. And is he faithful enough and wise enough for the master to place him over his household? What would that require? As we go on and read, that he is feeding, giving his fellow servants their food at the proper time. What is the proper time? You say, well, any time is the proper time. The proper time would be when the world is ready to end. The world is ready for judgment. God needs servants, disciples, who will deliver his testimony, which is the gospel of the kingdom. And this gospel of the kingdom must be delivered to the whole world, because the end will come. And the serious part, not that there's not any part of this that isn't serious, but the most serious part of this is, you remember just earlier where the Son of God described what the condition of the world would be like when he returned? Do you remember what that condition?
As it was in the days of Noah.
As it was in the days of Noah. And what happened in Noah's day?
Judgment.
Worldwide
judgment. Right.
So the time when this servant starts working will be as it was in the days of Noah, a world hurtling toward a state of
chaos,
hard-heartedness, to where God word will have no effect. The love of most will be cold.
And also preoccupied with normal activity.
Yes. The food. What did the Son of God always compare his word to his disciples? And to the people who came to listen, what was he saying?
Good food.
Bread of life, bread of life, bread of life, water of life. His words were life. So this individual will be delivering the testimony of Jesus, his word as bread, feeding his fellow bondservants. And it will be just in time so that the lost sheep, who when they hear the voice of the good shepherd, his words, his testimony, the truth, when they hear it, they will go, that is what I've been waiting for. That is what I've been looking for. None of what I've heard before makes any sense. It doesn't fill me. But this is true food and true drink. And this faithful and wise servant will be feeding his fellow servants, preparing them for an integral part as the closing age begins. The closing of the age begins. And ultimately, that testimony will go to the whole world. Just as was described by Daniel to Nebuchadnezzar, there is a stone that cut itself out of the quarry. That stone is a spiritual stone, and it was laid alongside the cornerstone. And the house began to come together according to the instructions delivered by the Son of God. And when the Son of God comes in the clouds at the end, that house will be complete. Good news of the kingdom is the testimony of Jesus. Nothing more, nothing less. The law and the prophets are included in the testimony of Jesus. The law, the prophets, and the testimony of Jesus. At the end, those offspring of the woman will keep the commandments of God and hold to the testimony of the Son of Elohim.
Do you have a couple more minutes?
No, we are. Yeah, you can ask a quick question. We have about 50 seconds.
Okay. Well, we don't have time for the answer.
Okay. Thank you, Rick. That was terrific. And we encourage our listeners to go to our website here at Blog Talk Radio. In a little bit, you can download this program or any other of our programs. I just thought I would let you know that as of right now, we have 21,118 people on our website who have joined us. And we encourage you to join us as well. Thank you. We'll see you all next Friday for another edition of the Bible on Trial, and a week from today for another edition of the Revelation of Jesus. So long for now.